if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen,
country, and video games. BRB UK.
Worse teeth,
better accents.
Indeed, wait a minute, I'm not Dan, I'm Coleman. Hi, and welcome to this here episode of the Big Red Barrel UK podcast, episode 357. 357 of them little episodes. A lot more if you count things like past episodes before BRB UK, and half episodes, usually starring a man called Tim Hibbs. Hello, Tim.
Hi.
Hi. We're without Dan, because me and Tim are sensible boys, and we've... We're sans Dan. We are sensible boys who come back early before the streetlights are on. Dan is still at carnival right now over in Notting Hill, getting his groove on and whatnot.
That is a big fat lie.
No, that's exactly what is happening. So with that, we are going to carry on the show without Dan this week. We thought we could get a guest in, but makes it easier if there's just two of us and I get to edit let one less person. So I thought, hell, to hell with it. I'm going to have a nice, easy week this week. Saying that, Tim's still here, so it might not be so easy.
It might drag on some.
Talking about things that aren't easy, let's talk about Telltale Games. And they're... Because this year... Well, last year, in fact, we got the rumblings that they were shutting down. And then they started to shut down. And then this year, they finished shutting down. And now also this year, it seems they're back, sort of.
Spiritual successor would be the kindest way of putting it in gaming parlance.
We've got an imposter who's wearing the skinned corpse of Telltale Games, and it's returned home to its family, hoping that they won't notice. Much like THQ Nordic.
For me, this is more akin to Atari, basically. It's kind of trying to live off the name of something that went before, and purely living on that name. And to be fair, they did detail that they were kind of hinting at the fact that there'd be freelance work for some of the ex-employees if they were... willing or whatever, and then with possible jobs leading on from that. But as I said, a bit more akin to Atari, but you were saying a bit more like THQ Nordic, which the only thing with their name is at least they put their other name in with it as well and kind of owned the fact that it's...
That's because Nordic Games kind of cleaned up at the fire sale that was the closing down of THQ. And because of that, they started putting out some remasters of THQ titles and then went, you know what? We're THQ Nordic. That seems legally okay. We can call ourselves THQ Nordic. And I think they've now dropped the Nordic, not in terms of a company, just in sort of terms of Twitter and social presence. So they are now THQ in all public personas of the sense. But this is the case of LCG Entertainment. They have purchased Telltale Games, their entire backlog and all their assets. Well, not their entire backlog, sorry. All their assets and the backlog to some of their licensed properties, which include The Wolf Among Us and Batman. And they appear to be in the idea of they're going to carry on re-releasing those titles on other platforms, I'm assuming, but also carrying on the sequels to titles. So just before they sadly died an untimely death, The Wolf Among Us 2 was announced, and I'm assuming with a company like DC behind your back, you would like to put out something also in the Batman universe, even though season 2 wasn't as good as season 1. But I mean, is it confirmed fully if they are going to be Telltale Games, or if this is a brand new company name?
I think what they have purchased is the name at the moment, basically, and some of the assets that go with that. To what I understood of the way that the story's been reported, at least, it's going to be known as Telltale Games, and that's part of the revival, basically, kind of thing.
I hope they call it, like, the new Telltale Games, you know, like New Coke.
Yeah, that's what I say. That's why I think... The one thing is, like, you can't necessarily accuse the people that are coming in of... being evil people with bad intentions at the moment. Like, we really don't know exactly what they're going to do, and you have to kind of give them time to, you know, present themselves and the way they're going to do their company. As I said, with THQ Nordic, I felt that was a little bit more honest and kind of owning the thing. Okay, we're going to have THQ. Let's attach our existing name to that. Even if that's for a transitionary period, at least that's making people aware of the situation, kind of thing. Whereas, as you say, if they do something to acknowledge that with the name of Telltale Games, I think that goes some way to conveying their attitude with it, possibly. So we'll wait and see on that.
It's kind of a weird transition as well, because Telltale Games, if I remember correctly, they're formed from ex LucasArts employees who immediately went on. That's why a lot of their early titles are Monkey Island and Sam and Max. They wanted to pick up and carry on those lineages because LucasArts didn't seem to be interested anymore in carrying these on.
Right, yeah.
And from that point, that forms Telltale Games. Telltale Games then closes down and then kind of runs on a skeleton crew to finish off its last game and now gets bought by a new company and is another version of Telltale Games. So it's kind of weird. It's sort of studio on studio on studio on studio to get to this point. The current people that are running, because you say we don't know if they're bad people. However, the people that are now going to be running Telltale Games is Jamie Ottle and Brian Waddle. And Ottle especially, he was the CEO of Galaxy Pest Control, which they've worked on licensed properties in the past. One was the really, really boring Power Rangers 2D title they released a couple of years ago. And the other one was the horribly bad video game for a horribly bad TV show starring horribly bad people, Duck Dynasty.
See, I don't really remember that, so I don't know the significance of it.
There's some racists in Duck Dynasty.
Oh, good. Great. Yeah,
one of those E! Entertainment kind of reality, big quotation mark shows in the US.
Okay.
But anyhow. But yeah, anyway, they're going on ahead. They're going to be going on ahead and running the new version of Telltale. We're going to call it new Telltale. New Telltale. that's now the name of this. It's like new metal. It's not as good as metal, but it'll do for now. It seems right for the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm assuming they're going to be, like I say, the sequel to Wolf Among Us. There was work that had been made into that. I hope that is the first thing they announce. I really like that game.
Well, yeah, wasn't that, like, for all intents and purposes, pretty much finished at that point? That might be why it might be even easier to see that one coming out, no?
Yes, yeah. The other thing as well, I don't know if you watched any of the... There were some really good documentaries into the death of Telltale, as it were. And there were a couple of snippets of, like, the Stranger Things video game they were working on that was essentially the game that was meant to save and also the game that kind of buried them at the time.
Right.
Because they were moving license to license and they really need to sort of stop, work things out, make some more smarter business decisions. And they went, no, Netflix are going to give us a big cash injection. And it kind of sunk them at the same time. But the footage for the Stranger Things video game looked really, really good, and they put a lot of effort into improving their engine even further than they had done for Batman in the past. So I was actually, like, when I'd heard of it, and I was kind of petering out Stranger Things because of season two and stuff, and thought, this doesn't look like a great idea. And then when I actually saw footage, I went, oh, I'm really gutted I didn't get to play that game now, because it looked really good. And they apparently made a lot of changes trying to steer away from this kind of modern version of a point and click title and try to make more of an engaging game than before, and that's something I would have liked to have seen. So we'll see what they do going forward. Like you alluded to earlier, they're not starting off with this giant team of all the original employees. They're welcoming previous Telltale employees to come in as freelance to you know, try work on titles. They're starting off with a very small team is the idea. So, I mean, this could all be dead in the water to begin with, for all we know, but we'll see how it goes and report back further, I guess.
Yeah, I have to see how that one goes. As I said, we'll give them time to actually, see how that goes. But I guess that's good news for fans of those previous games, at least that might be, something that we see at least more of those games coming out, possibly.
And just to throw that out there, if they do start taking on employees and wanting to build a bigger team and carry on with the licensed titles and sequels and stuff, can't go wrong with a new Tales from the Borderland. That would be really, really good. That was the best game they put out, I think. So going from the smaller, tiny little studio into the big Goliath, Blizzard.
Yep.
Or Activision Blizzard, if you would like. Blizzard Entertainment, they have filed a lawsuit in California against Sina Games, which are a large mobile developer over in China, I believe. So this is all about a free-to-play title called Glorious Saga, which they claim has almost entirely copied from World of Warcraft games and related products. So there seem to be a lot of assets, backgrounds, characters, names, places. Even the icon itself for the mobile app looks suspiciously like the cover to Battle of Azeroth.
Right.
So they've asked for a $150 million for their infringed work.
It's a figure.
I mean, it's a big number, and if it depends on the sale of the game and how much money they've made and yada yada, and how much damage it really could have done. I don't really know a lot about the Chinese market with video games, especially World of Warcraft. I know at one point it was, you know, one of those titles that seemed to be huge the world over, especially in Asian countries. And I can imagine if you're going, here's a free-to-play version of World of Warcraft on a mobile that you can take anywhere, that might allure people away from the big desktop game. But yeah, we'll see. I thought, you know, it's interesting to see when video games get sued and what kind of changes that spurs, if it's a company going under or changes to a video game. In this case, reading through the actual lawsuit that's filed, it would have to be a lot of changes made to the game itself, because most of the assets seem to be nicked from World of Warcraft. And because, like, the mobile marketplace as well seems to be, it's something that it's just rife with copyrighted material. You look at, but they're usually really slapdash kind of copyright versions. Like Cuphead, when Cuphead was coming out, it was just Cuphead all over the App Store. There was Firewatch as well. I've seen knockoff Firewatches, but they look nothing like the game. GTA is a big one as well.
When you say knockoff Firewatches, I've just got a view of like a guy, trench coat, opens it, like whole load of stolen watches on fire.
Yeah, that's basically it. We're having a fire. Watch. No, literally, there's the brilliant video that one of the developers of Firewatch put up a while ago, and it just shows the kind of Firewatch station, some trees and grass, and then you can walk off the earth. And also, there's a nice red sunset in the background, but if you walk up, like, the sun is on the floor. It was quite impressive. So he shared the video, like his playthrough of the video, before he proceeded to get the video game pulled. Yeah, I always like to see how these go. Seems to be rife for the suing the world of mobile markets at the moment.
I don't know how successful they'll be at doing that in China and getting that through. Obviously, they would believe that there's some chance of something, otherwise they probably wouldn't bother doing it. But you imagine, it's one of those things, they have to protect their license, they have to be seen to be doing that every now and again. They may make a fairly spurious kind of claim against someone just because they have to at a certain point in time. But this could be one that they've identified as, well, this one might actually have some, you know, weight to it, basically. But whether they can actually get it through, like, I don't know, like, because generally I think part of, you know, problems with trade and stuff at the moment is China's policy on intellectual property. And, you know, they'll have Apple stores that have never been anywhere near Apple and stuff, and and, you know, other things that are basically copied, and software and other bits and bobs as well that people talk about. But you know, whether that's something that, you know, is it even less enforceable in the digital era? I don't know how that works in China particularly, but I imagine that it's not something that's probably going to get much traction, I would imagine. But we'll see.
And you might be thinking, why did Coleman put this in the agenda? Why did Coleman put this in the headlines, especially? I mean, between us, we're not really World of Warcraft fans. We don't know anything about the Chinese market, and we definitely don't know anything about Glorious Saga. It's because I just wanted to put out a message to Blizzard following this story that they're suing this mobile video games company. And Blizzard, I know you're listening, because you clearly do. What's the matter? Don't you have mobile phones? And with that, we move to points of interest. Tim, would you like to know some announced release dates of video games?
I jolly well would.
Good, because this doesn't just include announcements of release dates, but also announcements of the video games themselves. Thus, condensed into one handy sentence which saves on time, unless I explain it, which I just did. Okay, so Mario Kart Tour, that is going to be a mobile game. We've spoken about it before. We have no idea if we're excited or not, no, because we all own Switches. Why do we need to talk about boring mobile games that don't let you play on the London Underground because the signal doesn't work? And you need to be always online on mobile or video games now. Hey.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's going to be out on iOS and Android devices on the 25th of September.
See, I don't know whether to be more less excited about the fact that it's coming out on my birthday. Is that good? I don't know. I mean, worse things could happen on my birthday, but you know.
I mean, in the past, I've bought you video games for your birthday. I think I'd be pretty stingy if I pick you up Mario Kart Tour. But if you want to pick up Mario Kart Tour, or maybe pre-order it for Tim, you can do so on the iOS, which would be dumb because he hasn't got an Apple device. But anyway, you can now pre-order live on the iOS store if you wish to do so. That's something we'll probably have a look at further when the game actually comes out. I won't, because I've cracked the screen of my phone and will cut my finger if I try to play any games. Or it'll be something new to test on my new phone when I replace the damn thing. We could talk about it in the future. It's not really important. Mega Man Zero ZX Collection, that has been announced. Okay. So this will be the third Mega Man Legacy Collection, I believe.
So what does that have in it? Do we know?
No.
Oh.
No, we do. This one combines all four Mega Man Zero and two Mega Man Zero ZX games into one handy game format.
I have no idea what sort of Mega Mans they are, anyway.
I dropped off at Mega Man 3, I have to be honest. But hey,
if you're interested.
That's fair enough. Now, I used to play a lot of those three on Nintendo when I was a kid. But if you're interested, those are going to come to the PlayStation 4, the Switch, the Xbox One, and PC on the 21st of January next year. Not too long to wait, which is terrifying because I only just realized how close we are to September. And the other one, which really, really annoyed me when I found out for reasons I'll unveil in a bit.
What?
Well, there's going to be a collection of Aladdin and Lion King titles coming to the Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One.
Ooh.
Now, I'll run down the list of the ones that will be involved, which is the Disney's Aladdin, the Sega Mega Drive / Genesis version. Mm-hmm. Disney's Aladdin Game Boy version, which includes the Super Game Boy version, which adds more color and Super Game Boy style.
Super Game Boy color.
Super Game Boy style. Also, Disney's Aladdin Final Cut. No idea what that is. No one knows what that is. We'll find out, I guess, when the game comes out.
Okay.
Disney's Aladdin Trade Show Demo, which is a demo version that hasn't been made available since 1993, apparently. Also, the Lion King Sega Mega Drive and Genesis version, the Lion King Super Nintendo version, the Lion King Game Boy version, also with Super Game Boy version. Now, all these games will be polished up and look very nice and can contain new features and run a bit like the Disney After School collection that came out a little while ago. All brilliant news. One thing, it is missing Disney's Aladdin on the Super Nintendo, which was a very different version of the game compared, basically a completely different version of the game compared to the Mega Drive version. I remember having the Mega Drive version, like a lot of my friends did, and then going to a different friend's house to play the SNES version, and just my mind blown that it was just so different and harder and more fun. Crazy. But hey, the reason this annoys me is a while ago, I was someone put up like one of those memes saying, hey, you think Dark Souls is hard? Try this. And it was the Mega Drive version of The Lion King. And I had to pipe up and go, it's not that hard. I beat The Lion King many, many times in my life.
Right.
And I got called out on it. You know, the reason being is it was the pack-in game with my Mega Drive. So for a while, it was one of three games I owned. So I played a lot of that game till I beat it many times. And I bought a Mega Drive. I bought the cartridge with the specific intention of doing a playthrough to prove I can beat The Lion King. And now it's going to come to the Switch for probably a much more reasonable price, I'm assuming. But also, I'd like to point out, when they released the Disney After School special, and it had the Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers game in it, I did the exact same bloody thing. I bought it on the SNES for a ridiculous price. Sorry, on the Nintendo for a ridiculous price, and then they re-released it with all these new features and stuff. But hey.
Well, you're just, you know, yeah, bad timing, man. What game have you bought recently in retro that's going to come out and be announced soon?
No, I'm not. I've stopped. I've stopped because this keeps happening to me. Are you excited about any of these games at all? Any nostalgic memories of The Lion King and Aladdin?
I played Aladdin and I have some, like, you know, I hold that in some reverence in terms of remembering it being a fun game despite being a platformer, mostly, as I remember. But then, yeah, I never played The Lion King. So, yeah, I liked the, you know, original cartoon, but never played the game back in the day. So, yeah. I might pick it up at some point on the Switch, possibly. I'm thinking, maybe, if it's reasonably enough in price. Then...
Oh yeah, if it's a 30 quid game, they can jog on. But Aladdin especially, that's like my rosebud for me, because to this day I still remember the level skip cheat. If you press pause and type ABBA, it'll go and you skip to the next level. Also, if you'd like Infinite Ammo in the Alien trilogy, that's I've Got Pink Acid Boots On. And if you'd like the invincibility cheat Predator,
Pink Acid Boots On, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. But some of the letters aren't in the aren't there for selection, so you have to replace them with the corresponding numbers. And also, if you want invincibility, I believe it was in Predator on the Mega Drive, that one is Camouflage. There you go. So the Disney Classic Games, Aladdin and Lion King collection, that will be available.
A timely collection of cheat codes in the middle of a podcast. The perfect way to deliver cheat codes in 2019, I think, Coleman.
All right. That will be available on the 29th of October this year, just before Halloween. So if you really do think The Lion King on the Mega Drive is that hard, there you go. You can scare yourself with this version. I do like that it's called Disney Classic Games, colon, Aladdin and Lion King.
Yeah.
Because that implies we may get more titles. And I would quite like to revisit Toy Story on the Mega Drive. I remember playing that one a lot as well.
Oh, yeah, Toy Story. I was thinking more of the old Mickey Mouse games again, but, you know.
Definitely. Oh, what was the one with Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and they had, like, magic carpets? I think it was World of Illusion or something.
Something of Illusion. Castle of Illusion. Yeah. There was a few somethings of Illusion, weren't there? And I get them confused. But
I remember playing that one a lot as well. Yeah. Lots of Mickey Mouse games.
And by that, we don't mean, you know, a bit Mickey Mouse.
Not in a Danny Dyer down the market trying to flog you some Mickey Mouse games. I assume that's what he did before acting. But anyway, that's all the news we've got this time for this week. So we are going to talk about those darn games that we darn gone played. I don't know why I said it like that. Doesn't really matter. Games we done played. Tim, we're going to go to you first because you have the more important game to talk about this week.
More important.
Not because of status, just because you've got a review code, so you have to talk about it. Otherwise, we get slapped on the wrist.
Yes, and we should point that out. I was given a review copy of the game. I was also invited to the preview to go and play this before, and I have talked about it on the podcast before because I talked about going to the preview.
So this is a supplied review code warning bell.
there you go.
As you were.
We have
as you were.
Done so. But yeah, anyone doesn't know, to give it its full title, The Dark Pictures Anthology, colon, Man of Medan.
Not Medan, as I keep saying.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
How about you keep saying Medan, I'll keep saying Medan.
And we'll meet somewhere in the Medan middle.
One of us has to be right, unless we're both wrong.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Medan. But neither of us are down this week. Anyway, so we can't make that joke. But yeah, anyone doesn't know yet, that's the full title of the game. It's the proposed first game in an oncoming series, but it is also kind of the spiritual successor to Until Dawn. I have to add that I think the only reason that they've gone in that direction is to make it multi-format, possibly, and get away from the fact that I think Until Dawn was linked to the PS4.
Technically, it was linked to the PlayStation 3.
Well, yes.
Because it was a PS3 title exclusive for the PlayStation Move.
Well, at one point. But yeah,
yep.
But yeah, like it's they obviously had close ties with Sony and are in taking some separation in that, but that's allowed them to kind of give themselves a refresh and a starting point and a slight difference in presentation. But they've taken a lot of notes from Until Dawn and everything they did with that, and as I said, very much a spiritual successor to that. It's very much in keeping with that, and it's hard not to bring direct comparisons with that, which is why straight out of the boat I'm kind of going with, you know, just kind of presenting that information basically. But anyone that didn't play Until Dawn, it's a very kind of cinematically presented horror sort of almost like a teenage action flick type thing. A bit like teenage action flicks, the wrong kind of thing, but a bit like I Know What You Did Last Summer. Cabin in the Woods was a good one for Until Dawn, but this one's a bit more like Ghost Ship. Have you seen Ghost Ship?
That's... Oh my God, what a terrible film to reference.
Well, you know, but it's that type of thing. It's like a spooky tanker type or big ship that you end up on and most of the story takes part on. Now,
it's like a ghost ship, some would say.
I'm going to dodge any spoilers on this because it's a very story-driven game and the how the story plays out and who actually survives to the end is very much like the you know what you do in the story. You can get to the end of the story without all of the main characters surviving, and you can get to the end of the story with various amounts of them surviving as well.
So much like Until Dawn, you've got multiple endings which are based on who lives, who dies, good outcomes, bad outcomes, yada yada.
And is it Sean Astin, I think, is playing one of the lead roles in this, basically.
Who we can never remember. Is he Iceman or is that his brother?
I think it's Iceman, basically.
Right, okay.
Very much like him, indeed.
They are twins.
Yeah, but most of the other actors aren't as recognisable as he is, basically. But, you know, they all look very... as I said, the level of cinematic presentation is very high. Like it's one of those things where a lot of people walk in and go, oh, are you watching this or playing this? Is that a movie? Like, it's one of those...
Yeah. Not every actor can be a Rami Malek or a Hayden Pantyhair.
But and it's very much takes the kind of when you're going through a scene, it's got like a fixed point that'll take the camera angle from, often a kind of, you know, give it a spooky or kind of eerie kind of era, as if someone's watching you from behind something or something, and like you're walking through that sort of environment. That's the one thing that I think where the game jars slightly against the cinematic presentation, because you're in control of a character and sometimes you have to walk in a very precise way and the control isn't always as precise. Like, you're like bumping up against a wall, and that doesn't happen in a movie kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like, so it jars you for a second and throws you off. But like, generally, like the it's very much it flows from like cutscene to game and back to cutscene and stuff like that. I'll say flows. The one thing from a technical standpoint that I'm hoping this is, I've been playing pre-release and I'm hoping there'll be a day one patch that really helps this game run a bit more smoothly. I'm going to give it a bit of a pass because I have been playing it pre-release, but it does come with a heavy caveat that there's quick time events in a lot of the kind of action scenes that you're going through. And that is really hard to judge sometimes when things are stuttering and things are going on. So yeah, like other than having a hard time with that, that's hopefully something that you won't even see on the release version, or will at least be improved in time for release. But yeah, like it wasn't significant throughout, but it was enough to be repetitive throughout the game to be a noticeable problem, let's say that. But that aside, and the other thing for me as well, like, this is it's like a little bit of a sequel to Until Dawn. Like, it is a smaller game, basically.
Right.
And in some ways I think that suits the format of the game quite well, actually. When I initially finished the game, I was like, oh, that was...
Oh, was that it?
Yep. Really? That's the end of the... Oh, okay. Ooh, all right. And I had to go and look up... I literally went and looked up the price of the game because I hadn't...
£25.
Yeah, and £25. I was like, oh, okay. That changes the equation somewhat, kind of thing. Because I was thinking this was possibly... not quite full price, but a lot closer to it, basically.
Because this is first in a series, and they have announced they've already announced the second game, which I think releases early next year. But is that? I mean, it's difficult without spoiling the game itself. Or is that meant? Do you know if this is a story that then continues on, or if it's going to be a story elsewhere?
Right. I don't know if there will be the chance to continue with one of the possible storylines and move that forward going on. That's a possibility. But it depends what you want to do. I think it's easier to actually go to a different setting and start again, and then, you know, the all bets are off sort of thing.
What's the right word? Anthology series.
Yeah, and that is very much the way they're presenting it. There is some alluding to the fact that they could return to this setting or they could move on. But I'd be happy either way, to be honest, from what I've seen. As I said, we didn't really get into it, but it's that kind of horror presentation and the, kind of cutscenes and choices within those cutscenes, and then having to make choices in kind of quick panic situations, and then the kind of quick time event type stuff. So a lot of people kind of bounce off that, but it's something that I really liked in Until Dawn. I was a big fan of Until Dawn, and for me, this initially I was like, oh, okay, I don't know. But then, as I said, factoring into the equation the price and how it goes, I actually really like some of the stuff they've done with how they know people will want to interact and play the game as well. Because what you can do, which I think is really quite nice, is go into any chapter that you previously played, pick up from that point, and carry on. And you can do that as a overwriting your existing save file, or as a new save file.
Oh, good, because that's always been a problem for me in games like Detroit and well, basically anything that is Quantic Dreams or this, essentially.
I don't want to play it through 20 times, and I don't want to have to reset a chapter every time I get one tiny decision wrong. And
I hate the idea of when there's a section that I like and I want to go back and show someone, or I want to go back and replay it and try it slightly different, or just try it different outright, that it then overwrites that same, like, well, I'm here now. And it's one of the more irritating things that I've never got why they don't do exactly what they're doing here. So that's really good news for me.
Yeah. And it literally allowed us to very quickly go in and do a few things differently. I'm dodging around a few things, but doing a few things differently near the end of the game. And that allowed some different things to happen that didn't necessarily all go well, but it gave me a different appreciation for the entire game and the way it worked. And right. there's a guy called the Creator, I think they refer to him as, and he's taken over from, in Until Dawn, there was a kind of psychiatrist who was presenting and talking to you very much in a kind of first
in the
person
VR
sort of
game
thing.
As well, I believe, as like the kind of ghost town, well, the ghost ride leader, the
yes,
guy ran,
and
carnival leader.
Yeah, and the Dark Pictures anthology as a whole, it seems the Creator is going to be the one that's not quite the narrator into the story, but kind of, you know, knows a bit of what's going on, can give you some hints and clues, and when you interact with him between different parts of the game. There's, without spoiling too much, there's one line that he says that sometimes repercussions have a long time to take effect, and it's my appreciation of them delivering on that line that might give me a different appreciation for the game. I was like, oh, that's really good. And also means that I'm now actually keen to go and restart the game from scratch and do something differently near the beginning of the game to have different outcome to the overall game, basically. So yeah, it's something where, as I said, I actually think chopping up into little bits makes it easier to replay, and the way they've done the save thing is a really intelligent thing that really helps you mess around and appreciate some of the stuff they've done with that as well, basically.
Is it safe to say he's kind of like a Rod Sterling type, where he's not there to influence the characters or narrate the story? Like, he's therefore semi-narration, but also to kind of let you know, or get a gauge on you, or give you a gauge on the story itself.
But oddly, he can give you hints which are almost like more story-based hints of what's going on, kind of thing, and stuff like that. But yeah, I really like what they've done with it. I think it's something that will lend itself well to being in these little chunks. And after the first part, I'm along for the rest of the ride, basically.
Okay.
As I said, I've deliberately dodged around talking a lot of the story elements and a lot of what happens in the game, because I think that's central to enjoying the game. But I can heartily recommend it, especially if you were a fan of Until Dawn. As I said, there are people in the world that don't like QuickTime events, and I can't necessarily recommend it if you do. But generally, as I said, as a fan of that game, and with them having a few missteps in the VR world, I was a bit dubious going in, possibly. But I think they've really delivered on this, and I think this is something where this first part has created a good, first part to kind of set the platform for the rest of them. And as I said, yeah, I'm on board after that. So yeah, I'm good.
Quickly before we move on, because we do need to throw this in there as well. But I do mean quickly, because we've got a lot to talk about still. Multiplayer in this game, that's the big difference over Until Dawn. Whether that's an improvement or not, you'll have to tell us.
Sorry, that is something I forgot to reference as well, and that's something that's worth covering, because I still think this is best even when played as a group, played in single player.
Okay.
The way that they've done it is that you can have up to five players playing, and they can take control of the five main characters. The problem with that is the game doesn't then divvy up sections of the game into five equal portions, because the story just happens and unfolds. And it does mean, in the situation where you only had four people playing, so it meant that I was in control of two people. But that was a mistake in the end, because I played more of the game initially anyway than anyone else, and it meant that other people were just sitting around for like half an hour before anyone else other than me got to play.
Yeah, because I was present for this, and I was the last character in the game, which, you know, it was a night of reverie, and I'd had far too many lemonades at this point that finally came to me, which if I was more engaged in the game, probably wouldn't have happened by that point. But then I heard you went back to it also with different people, more sober people.
Well, right, I just think it's better just literally playing it in one player and passing the pad when you decide you want to. if you're playing with a load of adults, that's not really a problem. But having said that, the one thing the preview event did give me an opportunity to do, which I wouldn't normally do and haven't done since, but would like to possibly do at some point, is playing it online. Because when two people are actually playing it, it's quite interesting, because you're not necessarily in the same place at the same time, and it splits right. some of the story, so that you'll have to then communicate to the other person what's going on. But in the situation that I was playing, we didn't actually communicate at all, basically. Like, we just talked about it afterwards, and I think that might be a really interesting way of actually playing it as well. I don't know how playing it through the first time that way would be, but I also think, in some ways it would actually be the best way to play it the first time, because then you're only ever getting half the information. But as I said, like the actual, like in the room multiplayer, I just don't think they should have bothered with it. I don't think it added that much to the game. I can see what they were going for and giving like each player ownership over a character, and if that character dies, then you're kind of out of the game.
But from our experience playing it, it just kind of slowed it down into a crawl, and it was very hard to kind of focus on what's going on when you're just waiting for your turn.
Yeah, and I don't know, like I think it made everyone more engaged if all the characters are, you know, representative of the people in the room. Like I felt more engaged with the game when we were just passing it back and forth between us, kind of thing, rather than, oh no, it's your turn now, I can sit back, kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like it, yeah. I think that's even worse if we got to the point where people were dying, although that seems to be the case that is spread throughout the game. But like, literally, can you imagine playing it for an evening and you get eliminated, and that's it, you're not going to play for the rest of the evening, right? Really? Okay. I guess that could be an interesting way of playing it in some regards, but I don't think it's the best way to play it the first time you're playing it through if you want to be engaged with the story and the game.
All right, well, yeah, sounds like online is the way to go then. So Man of Medan, that is out on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC, I believe?
I believe so, and on Friday, so hopefully the day you're listening to this podcast.
That's right. So you can listen to this podcast, and if you want to drop down the $24.99 and you like what Tim's saying, then you can go pick that up. Would you recommend it, Tim?
I would indeed.
Excellent. That is a recommend, unless you like QuickTime events.
Unless you don't like QuickTime events.
Oh, sorry. Unless you don't like QuickTime events or the guy from X-Men who played Iceman, possibly him or his brother. Who was also in Quantic Break? I don't know. They look so alike. It's hard to tell. Is it him? Is it not? I mean, if you didn't like him, then you could kill him, I guess, in the game, because he's one of the main characters.
I may have done that.
7 times. Kept rewinding, doing it again and again.
May have killed the one recognizable dude. Anyway.
This is for Days of Future Past. There you go. This is for Last Stand.
Well, I may have done that in one playthrough.
Yeah, anyway. Okay, so I'm going to talk about my games, and I will carry on from last week. I started talking about Mortal Kombat 11. I will finish talking about Mortal Kombat 11, and that is because I finished playing Mortal Kombat 11. Mm. So I wanted to go through the plot of the game, and that was because a couple of years ago, I picked up Mortal Kombat XL, because it was super cheap in a year sale. And we played some Versus on it, because me and Tim like our fighting games. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of just sat in my library and didn't do anything with it. And then one night I was bored. I thought, you know what? Let's have a look at the story. Got really into it. Sat and played it from A to Z. Just completely enthralled. However, I don't know what happened in the 2009 version, Mortal Kombat 9, because I don't think I beat up to Mortal Kombat 2 in the story, you know, in where the storyline was. So I started playing 11. I got to a point, I went, and it did even more references to Mortal Kombat 9, and went, you know what? I'm going to watch a 2.5 hour video on YouTube showing me the entire story of 9. So that's what I did.
Okay.
The game made much more sense. I have some questions about Sub-Zero. I'll ask them in a moment.
Right.
But basically,
answers, but okay.
Okay. I mean for the general audience. So this one follows on from 9 to 10 and now 11. What's happened is at the start of 9, rather than going, this is a reboot of Mortal Kombat, they go, this is all part of the same storyline, because at the end of all the Mortal Kombat games, everything's gone to hell in a handbasket. Most of the champions are dead. There's only Raiden and Shao Kahn fighting. And Raiden goes, you know what? Sod it. Reboot. Grabs an amulet. Reverses time. And they start all over again. That starts 2009's Mortal Kombat. Some events transpire that end up changing the timeline. And then which leads us into 10. And basically, Liu Kang ends up dead. And Johnny Cage ends up becoming the champion of Elfrealm, essentially, which is brilliant because it's Johnny Cage and he's quite a funny character. And and then that carries on, and we end up with a whole Shinnok storyline, and we go through Mortal Kombat 3 and onwards. And then everyone defeats Shinnok, and then Raiden takes his Amulet of Power and wields the power for himself, and then in 11 he has now been corrupted by that power. He is evil Raiden. He's still on the force of good, but he's evil. He does evil things. Yeah, now his lightning evil is Raiden. Red lightning instead of blue lightning. Ooh, he wears black. Evil Raiden. And
they should have seen the signs, to be fair, really.
Yes. And he decides, after he's been trying to protect the Earthrealm and go defeat the Neverrealm and what have you, he's had Shinnok caged up in his basement this entire time, like some weird perv,
as you do,
electrocuting him.
Bring out the Shinnok!
He's been electrocuting him with red lightning just for, gigs, and decides, you know what, I'm just going to cut your head off, and I'm going to go deliver it to all your dead undead minions, which are people who died in the 2009 game. So evil Luke Yeej and evil Kung Lao and evil... lots of evil characters. And because during mm-hmm. this event, there's a character, time stops, and a character called Kronika, essentially Kronos, appears and goes, hold on, he's been dicking around with the time stream, I don't like this, I'm going to now reboot again. reboot the reboot, and I'm going to set, which is very timely for the state of cinema in this modern day and age, I'm going to reboot the reboot, and then I'm going to set an event the next timeline, which will basically make sure that everything is correct and that evil and good are balanced at the right way. Raiden will not be involved in this at all. And yeah, it's crazy. And because of this, she ends up bringing back people that have died, younger versions of other people. So Shao Kahn is back, Scarlet is back, Baraka is back.
It's basically a MacGuffin to mess around with time. Basically.
And bring back other characters without them being undead versions of the characters like Jade and Katana. And then Liu Kang. And younger versions come back as well, so there's younger versions of Kano and Eren Black, and they all exist alongside their counterparts. So what you end up is this cool roster of the people from Mortal Kombat 9 with the people from Mortal Kombat 10 to make Mortal Kombat 11 at Hankyo. And the story from that point, it goes crazy, and I really, really enjoy playing through the game. It does the system, which I think was introduced in Injustice Gods Among Us, the first one, and that is you can set the difficulty of your game, but if you start... you know, just absolutely cheesing through the game and it goes, hey, this guy's much better than he says he is. I'm just going to incrementally increase the difficulty of the game. And then if you start really struggling on someone, like you may find in about three games of losing, you suddenly beat the person, you go, wow, I must be getting better. You go, I'm going to start gradually decreasing the AI. And that's kind of, that's what makes the story mode more enjoyable for me and stop me getting frustrated and throwing my controller and stuff is that it is beatable for someone who is not absolutely amazing at fighter games. Anyway, really, really fun to play through. Really enjoyed the story. Great having some of the old characters back and stuff. Great having Cabal back. Like, haven't seen him for a while. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I borrowed this off you and I have started the story mode and obviously played a bit of co-op with you. But yeah, it seems really good, no?
Yes. I really like the story. However, I do prefer the story of 10, even though I didn't quite know what was going on there. there's things as well, like the characters, which I'm sure they'll sell back to me at some point, but there was the bringing in of the combat kids. So you had like Sonya Blade's kid and Jackie.
Yeah.
What's his name? Jax Briggs is child. But also That's right. And there was two other kids as well, two male characters. I've forgotten their names. But they're not in the game anymore. And one of those I got really good at, but they just lost the time until they sell it back to me, I guess. But as well, I did try...
Cassie Cage is there, and I like her, so
she's very good. She's very good.
Yeah.
I like as well... again, it's that kind of... We looked at Injustice 2 and all the facial animations in 2 just absolutely look spellbinding. Like, you did not need to put this much work into a fighting game, but you did.
Yeah.
And some long hours in crunch time apparently might have to do with how good this game looks, but the game looks good nonetheless, and it looks amazing. Ropey voice acting from Sonya Blade, because she is played by Ronda Rousey now, for some reason. I don't know. But...
Hey. Okay, I really don't want to belittle Crunch, but I do want to make her do Mortal Kombat, do Crunch with a K kind of reference. So we'll just skip over that and pretend I didn't.
I thought of something to say. I just know I shouldn't say it.
But yeah, like, kind of the thing with Mortal Kombat, though, is that I like the game. I didn't like their kind of model, and yeah, that's why I'm happy to borrow it off you. I don't know if I might end up getting it down the line when it's a bit cheaper and then getting the other characters or something, or getting the complete edition thing that they do later or
that's
whatever it is.
You wait for the complete version and then you wait for it to go down in price, like I did with X.
That is probably what I will do. But yeah, I have to admit to enjoying the game and liking the game. And like you're saying, in some places it looks ridiculously good. Like, so the thing I think about the story mode that like really kind of integrates the story into the fighting and vice versa is the stuff that they've done where, you know, it just kind of goes to the scene, you're like, oh right, I'm about to fight now, kind of thing. Like, you can kind of see the build up sometimes when it's just two of them squaring off against each other a bit. But that and the presentation of, like, you know, them just saying stuff that's relevant to what just happened in the scene at the end of the fight and that morphing back into a cutscene and stuff like that. And yeah, like, I just, yeah, the presentation is really good. And they I've only just started the story mode, but that seems enjoyable. And like you say, like it's something they've really nailed with Mortal Kombat and the Injustice series that I think, for me, I'd really like to see Street Fighter step up and do a take a similar approach. But I'm not sure that they will, because they tend to focus more on the, you know, the kind of esports scene.
Yeah, and they like to do their stories in animes and stuff as well.
Yeah. Whereas Mortal Kombat seems to be one that delivers a bit more for the general home audience kind of thing, no? But yeah, anyway.
As well, I played a bit of the Combat Crypt. I think it's just called the Crypt, to be honest. This one, instead of just going into a crypt and smashing up headstones to get your prizes in first person or in a menu type system, what you do is you walk around in a third person environment, the island of Shang Tsung. And complete with a Shang Tsung, an older version of the movie version, who they then released as DLC. And he's like, welcome to my island, look around, but you can take what you find, but not everything, because there are key things that you can't take, such as like Shao Kahn's hammer. And you go around, and there are not just things for you to spend currency on to unlock, but there's also puzzles in there and stuff for you to solve, which I found quite fun as well. So it was good to bimbo around with that. There's one of the currencies in the game that you can't get unless you perform fatalities, which you don't do in the story mode, because it's the story. If you rip someone's arms and head off, it will then, that character will not be able to continue in the story, obviously. So they don't let you do fatalities. So now in the more, in the towers type gameplay, arcade gameplay and stuff, that's where I'm trying to do more fatalities to try and build up this currency to get the better stuff.
I do like the fatal blow system they've added.
That was in the that was in X, wasn't it?
But I like the way that works generally into the structure of the game in general.
It's good.
It's nice back and forth. The fact you only get one per fight, and it kind of gives some strategy to, oh, should I do it now to finish him off, or should I kind of go for it and keep it? And yeah, like, it's interesting.
And I really like Shang Tsung's one. He has the best one as well, because he, as we remember, Shang Tsung can transform into other characters. And because Shang Tsung died in the 2009 game, he only knows like the original version of the characters. So he turns into like Scorpion and Sub-Zero and Noob Saibot, I think it is, but they're all the original old school palette swap ninja type character versions that he fights as in that combat system. So that's really cool. Also, he's got one of the goriest fatalities, and it really, really kind of made me, I sort of looked at it as it finished and went, I need to stop playing for a bit. that's why Tim now has my disc. So
yes, some of it is super violent as well, like really like over the top. Oh my word, I can't believe they just did that.
It's comical, but it's still kind of realistic looking. So
yeah, like it. Some of the stuff they do, like especially with the like the one that really gets me is the head spike on the thing in the background in the scenery. And one of them is just like, the more realistic the person is like, if it's, you know, a fantasy based character,
yeah, if it's like Cyrax, you're like,
it's a bit more acceptable somehow. But if it's like it happened to me as Cassie Cage the other day, and like her head going up, I was like, ah. But yeah, as I said, it's very brutal, and they've gone absolutely over the top with the fatal blow moves and the fatalities and stuff in general. But yeah.
So I will end that with, I like it. If you want it, go and get it. If you want it on the super cheap, probably wait till the end of the year or the Black Friday sales and stuff. I'm sure you'll be able to get this for about £20. Also, going back to my question, I want to end out on my question. Right. Sub-Zero in 2009's Mortal Kombat. He gets turned in. So they have a plot where the Lin Kuei are getting turned into robots like Cyrax and Sektor. Sub-Zero gets turned into one of those robots. And in the end of 2009, that he is that robot. In the Mortal Kombat 10, he is no longer a robot. But then in 11, they either Cyrax or Sektor, they say that the process from turning the Lin Kuei into robots is irreversible. So how does it get reversed? Why is Sub-Zero no longer a robot? Someone please tell me.
Oh, okay. That one I definitely can't tell you. But, you know, maybe he froze himself so that he didn't fully become a robot or something. I don't know.
At Big Red Barrel on Twitter, please let me know what happens. What happens to Sub-Zero?
What happened to Sub-Zero to Bot?
The last game, and I'm looking at the clock. We are running low on time, but
But I really want to hear about this.
Yeah, and I want to talk about this because this is really good. I've been playing Control, and everyone seems to be playing Control, and it seems to be getting very, very, very good reviews across the board. So, what is Control, I hear you ask?
What is Control, Coleman?
There we go. Thank you. I mean, I don't hear everyone ask. I just hear Tim ask, because that's how podcasts work. So Control, this is the latest game from Remedy. This is a third-person action-adventure title with some shooting elements. Surprise, surprise, because it's a Remedy game, and that's pretty much been what they've been doing lately for their last few games. So this one, where this is taking interest is that this is no longer a Xbox exclusive. This is a PlayStation game as well and a PC game.
And have you been playing on PS4, yeah?
I've been playing it on the PlayStation 4 Pro, which is important messaging, which I will get to in a moment. Yes, I will explain why I said the pro in a moment.
Right.
But first, this game, you play as a character called Jesse Fadden. You arrive at a building called the Oldest House.
Right.
The Oldest House is the headquarters for the Federal Bureau of Control.
Oh.
Which is kind of like this world's version of the FBI if Mulder was left in control of it at the end of X-Files and made his own changes. So the Federal, we'll call it the FBC from now on because it's easier for me to say because I apparently have trouble saying Federal. And Bureau in the same sentence.
Federal.
For Bureau? Anyway.
Federal.
So this is the FBC. It's a governing body that looks into normal events, I believe, and then covers them up.
Right.
is the best way of putting it. Yes. Jesse Fadden, the character you play as, she was involved in such an event in her hometown when she was a child. And the events of which have kind of followed her throughout her life and has led her as an adult, as a young adult, to find the headquarters and just walk in, basically, off the street and has had no problem doing such. What this leads to is, through some events unknown, she ends up becoming the director of the company and finds a mysterious weapon, which is kind of like a blocky-looking gun, a gun made in Minecraft.
Right.
Can transform itself into different types of the same gun. And they're all named like... So the main gun is called a grip. But then the first upgrade you find is called a shatter. And the shatter is clearly like the power of a shotgun. But it still looks like a handgun with a slightly larger nozzle on the end. And then there's other things like a stab and a rotor and all these kind of things. So it evolves as you progress with the game. As well... Jesse finds herself with kind of telekinetic powers. So she's able to attack people with like a psionic blast. She can then start, as the game progresses, you upgrade. You can start grabbing objects and throwing them at people from afar as well. One of the mechanics I really, really like as well, if there's no objects around, you just pull a chunk of the wall off or the ceiling or the floor and then lob that at the enemy. It works. It's brilliant.
Okay. Does that sort of deform the... thing is it does it or is yes, it just
yes,
kind of
yes it does okay. But as well, the Oldest House is which I like as well because you can be in a room and get into like a gunfight and just absolutely destroy the room and you'll come back later and it's all fine, and the reason is the Oldest House is a shifting house, it moves things around and stuff, and because of that, like, that it's fixed the room. That's a great way of getting around. We fix the room when you leave it, it's fine, don't worry, it's a video game. So what happens, you get this guy, this game that has very kind of strong Twin Peaks, X-Files, like weird kind of 90s, 80s sci-fi, TV sci-fi especially, it seems, where you have this kind of really fascinating story, I found, but as well a very stylish looking game. And it doesn't look like a stylish looking game because you may not have seen a lot about this game, because when you look at it on the surface, you're in an office building, which I don't know what time frame it is, but it seems very kind of grey, early 90s feel. So you're in a grey federal building, and then also when the building starts twisting around, it's very red and blocky. So those kind of things on the surface, they don't look like gorgeous things in advertising, I'm guessing. But when you're playing it, is quite breathtaking the way things can move around, because there's this kind of paranormal thing going on. The rooms do shift, and I'm trying to think the best kind of way I can think about it is kind of like Doctor Strange, Strange movie. You know, when they go into those kind of
Inception-y type stuff.
Yeah, I'm not talking about like whole buildings flying over and stuff, but when they're in that kind of mirror realm, the mirror dimension or whatever they call it, like parts of buildings are moving around to make platforms where there aren't platforms, but it's still like the wall of a building, but it's then elevated to the side and stuff. So it's not in such an extreme way as Inception, but it, you know, in a smaller surface way, but it still looks gorgeous when it happens. And it does, that does extend like the further you get in, does get more trippy and just absolutely beautiful looking. The game itself, Remedy aren't known for gunplay, which is funny because they always use guns in games, but they always find a way of getting around it. So in Max Payne, it was, we have bullet cameras. You know, you like the Matrix? We're doing Matrix stuff. Yeah, with Quantum Break. It's okay. The gunplay's not great. Here's a bunch of.
Neither's the rest of the game.
Well, the story wasn't great. I thought the actual power stuff was really cool.
Yeah, that was alright.
Yeah, and they seem to have taken that and gone, look, and as well, that game was restrained by, it was meant to be a launch game on the Xbox. They had all these ideas of this is going to be an episodic game that ties in with an episodic TV show on Xbox TV. And then when they got rid of all that stuff and tried to turn it into a just outright, you know, £50 game.
The bits that they glued back together didn't form a cohesive whole, and it's not too surprising.
Yeah. What it looks like they've done this time is go, okay, let's separate ourselves from an exclusivity deal where we're tying stuff into a console. Let's get rid of those gimmicks. Let's take the thing that Focus tested really well, and that was the powers. And that's what they've done again. It's okay shooting with really good power play.
But I have to say, from the reviews and from what you said about it as well, like I really think that I'm really glad to see Remedy kind of, you know, back on its feet, as it were. Like I really like what they do. They're clearly very talented developers, and having them make good games is great for everyone, basically.
And I think that I do really think they're a one of a kind developer, just for kind of the attention to detail they do. It's kind of like, and I say one of a kind developer because they clearly have. I think they take a lot of reference from Hideo Kojima in their modern video game style that they work with, where like there is a lot of influence from, say, Metal Gear Solid and that kind of gameplay, but also the surrounding world and all the stuff that they hide in the world. Like Hideo Kojima is really good at that. What they do is they take it to a new level. It's like, I mean, in Quantum Break, was a video for the flipping Alan Wake movie that they made in that world, which was insane. In this case, yeah, they do things like that. There's TV shows that play. I mean, when you're walking through a security checkpoint to get into the building and it's empty, you can just walk in. There's a leaflet you find. It's like a checklist for security. And it's normal things like watch out for metals, watch, you know, any weapons or, and then it says watch out for, I think it's like neurally stimulating things like a bottle of ketchup. You know, something you wouldn't find. And then one of the first kind of set pieces you see is a vending machine. And inside the vending machine, everything is white packets with black writing on it. Like there's no stimulant in there whatsoever. I really like that. But then it extends to that as well. There's videos that you watch all the time. And I forget what the actor, there's a scientist who's constantly explaining things in the game in these short little videos that you can either ignore or watch. Or collect and watch them all in one big chunk, as I did, where he's either explaining like the objects of power, which are like random objects you find that have been imbued with paranormal powers, which you can then absorb and then get your abilities from. But I think that character, the actor, I think he was Alan Wake, you know, the guy who played Alan Wake. They seem to have a lot of that. There's a lot of alumni of Remedy Games in there as well. But the other thing they do really well with it, oh God, there's this creepy kids video in there, like a puppet show made for kids. And it's things like, Mummy disappeared and I don't know where she's gone. It's like, well, we should not question things, or the, you know, we shouldn't, we shouldn't be angry at the director for letting this happen. And
yeah.
like weird kind of brainwashing materials. So it's got all these lovely elements in there. There's posters in there that say, if there's a time lapse in the building, it doesn't count as overtime, which is so corporately beautiful. I love it.
Oh, that's really funny. I like that. But yeah, like as I said, I'm glad to see them back on their feet. I'm glad to see you enjoying it. I will definitely pick it up at some stage. I had to make a decision this week between Control and Astral Chain, which were both getting really good reviews. It seems to be a very good week in gaming. Like, I really enjoyed Man of Medan, as I said, Control. And I'll talk about Astral Chain hopefully next week if it arrives on time and stuff like that, because I'm getting a physical copy. But the other thing I was going to mention quickly is I've just started playing, and I'm going to play through the whole thing and then come back and talk about it properly next week. But Erica is, I've started playing, and that looks very good from what I've played of the initial bit. Interesting. Like, really interesting and very good, basically. And yeah, from the little bit that I've played, definitely seems having a look out for it. I think it was only a tenner. It's very much interactive movie type thing. A little bit like Man of Medan that I was talking about, but it's all full motion video and it's controlled from your phone, which is two weird things, but I definitely recommend it just from the little bit I've seen, and I'll come back and talk about that next week.
That shows direct F&B as well. Just to sort of round off as well, because that does link in with this as well, because there's all your characters are renders of actual actors and stuff, but when you're playing as Jesse, she has moments of close-ups in the face, internal monologues and stuff. And there was a point where she's kind of freaking out because of the powers around her, and it interchanges between the face render of the character and the actual actress. And I haven't seen that done before, and that really, I was like, that's really cool. Like, I don't know why I've never seen that happen before. But yeah, direct FMV, it seems to be coming back in a big way. But yeah. Supernatural Games, if you're looking for a game to pick up this week and you don't mind paying a full price, I would definitely suggest getting Control. The reason I say I'm playing it on the PlayStation Pro is there have been a lot of complaints. It does not run on a base PlayStation at all well. If the exploratory moments of the games are fine, but the combat, which unfortunately there is quite a lot of for this game, it just stutters. It makes the game really, really stutter. I've heard reports that it goes to like 9 frames a second at some points. Yeah. and as well, the problem with PC as well is there are a lot of video game graphic cards that haven't been correctly, tailored towards yet, which they are patching. So if you're getting on PC, you might want to wait or at least check. Either hold off for patches or check like what kind of spec you can expect with your setup. But on the PlayStation 4 Pro, it runs really well. I hear the best result is to get it on the Xbox One X, the world's most powerful console. But apparently that's your best bet to go on, even though this isn't an Xbox exclusive. They've worked with the system for a while. They know what to expect. They know what to deal with. And it runs buttery smooth on the Xbox One X. But the PlayStation 4 Pro version had no problems with it whatsoever. Really, really enjoy it. So, Control. Go pick that up.
Yeah, that is good. As I said, seems to be a very good week in high-quality games, a couple of weeks, maybe. But yeah, like, we're a bit spoiled for choice at the moment.
And this has to be one of the few weeks where we've done an entire show. We've spoken about 3 games and all of them are recommends.
Yeah, yeah. And with 2 possible recommends on top of that from what I've heard of Astral Chain and what I've played of Erica as well. So yeah, a very positive week, I'm glad to say, for video games at least.
That's good. Video games are back, guys. We're back to this.
Well, it should be pretty hectic this year for releases from now on as well, no? Yeah. So
we're all ready for giant piles of shame that we'll have to wait until next summer, the beginning of next summer, before we can start playing them again. Mm-hmm, but this does make me want to go back and play Quantum Break once I'm done.
I'd rather go back and play Alan Wake again.
Skipping all the kind of the Xbox TV stuff and then just playing the game and just enjoying the powers, because I enjoyed the powers, and the powers is, it's good to have the powers. It's good to have the power. We've got to wrap up and get out of here because we have gone over time slightly. We'll see how that looks after post editing. which you don't need to know about because you're just here to listen. But anyway,
he may even edit this bit out, and so you won't even know.
But next week, Tabor, we have a Tuesday in that week, and on a Tuesday, things happen.
That is all true, Coleman.
Tim, what happens on a Tuesday? Does the room move around?
Each and every Tuesday, we do an event at the Loading Bar in Dalston called Tabletop Tuesday. And each and every Tuesday, we have a different feature game, usually a board or a card game. And if you play that game that evening, you have a chance of winning a copy of the game at the end of the evening. We just had a whole month in August of creators. And so we did a full month, lots of creators joining us. So thank you very much for the people that joined us throughout that month. It's always really nice to have a creator there because then they can teach you the games. And this week we are going on to a different theme, but we also, because it's the first Tuesday of the month, Bez will be returning and doing some more tournaments, Bez of Stuff by Bez, and giving away some of her games, massive pile of her games that she's given away at the beginning of every month this year so far. For the last 3 months and the last 6 months of the year in general, basically. Come along for that. But then we've also got our feature game, which is a real doozy as well, which is Ticket to Ride London.
It's the
2 to 4 player, 10 to 15 minute version of Ticket to Ride. Perfect for the bar, perfect for being in London as well as we are. Is a really good little game. So great one to come along for, and you can win it just by playing it on the evening. Makes for a great little prize. If anyone doesn't know and wants to check it out, there are more details on the top left-hand corner of bigredbarrel.com, where I've already updated the post, so you can see details of this week's game and details of the bar and how to get there and stuff. There is also over 1,800 people now in our meetup group, and you can search for Tabletop Tuesday on meetup.com.
Well, that's a recommend from me, because if anyone knows anything about my love of board games, which isn't very large, the greatest board game of all time, in my opinion, is Ticket to Ride. So
yes,
there you go. And it's the
and
best
it's
one
London,
to introduce.
Baby.
Yeah, and even if you're not big into video games, I mean, if you aren't big into video games, why listen to this? If you're not big into board games, then this is one to pick up and learn. I take this one home to my family and we play at Christmas.
Yeah, so, and
not,
Ticket to
not
Ride
the London
is generally
version, the regular version.
Yeah. Ticket to Ride is a really good entry-level game, and this is an even stripped-down, faster version of that as well. Yeah. So it's good for fans of the game and good for people picking it up and getting the idea as well.
So that will be a purchase for me to take home to the Coleman's clan for the next Christmas. Anyway,
can
Tabletop
show them what
Tuesday.
It's like in London.
London. Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar on the 3rd of September. Ticket to Ride London. Thank you for listening. If you have listened and you've also given us some thoughts that you have shared, we would like to say those things, and you could do so in the future, and we will say those things in the future as well, such as these lovely people on Twitter. Tim.
Mr. Will Driver, thank you very much. Norman was here, thank you as well. And Mr. Richard Kirk, thank you.
And on Facebook, thank you to the lovely Freya Goddard and the lovely, I was going to say lovelier, but that's, you guys fight that one out over the title.
Yeah.
The also lovely Ed Price, who wanted to remind us that he is still the Big Red Barrel champion on WWE 2K19.
Yeah. Going to have to literally wrestle that off him at some point.
Maybe Extra Life.
Yeah.
We'll see. Please, if you want to give us some feedback, maybe questions, maybe just say hello, then you can do so on Twitter at Big Red Barrel, on Facebook, Big Red Barrel, and on the website, of course, absolutely, it is bigredbarrel.com. Also, you can go on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever it's called, on your local flavor of client. I'm trying to think. Local flavor of computer, be that Apple or PC. I think for us, it's still iTunes. On Apple, it's... I can't even say words anymore. But go give us a review. 5 stars is our favorite flavor. Write what you want. I mean, you could just write your shopping list and put 5 stars on there. We'll take it. We'll take it. We're desperate. It doesn't matter. And it does help us in algorithms somehow. But hey, and also
ended up panhandling for iTunes reviews?
No idea. But also, if you want to join our Discord channel, I know Dan would be very appreciative of that, especially because he is the main man that uses it. I drop in time to time. Tim sometimes figures out how it works. You can find a link to that on bigredbarrel.com on our front page. And now we have done everything. I think we've done everything. Have we done everything?
That's everything done. Let's go play some excellent video games.
Okay. We might be without a Tim next week. We might have a Tim next week. He's off doing secret mission things that we'll find out about another time.
Possibly,
but until
maybe.
That time, we will talk to you. We will talk to you. You will listen. You won't talk back to us because it'll be weird because it's a podcast. It's not how this works. We've already discussed this. Bloody hell. So until next time for episode 358 of the Big Red Barrel UK podcast, I have been Coleman.
I may have been Tim.
And Dan is in a gutter somewhere in Notting Hill wearing a neon set of hot pants.
Oh, in this post-truth society, that might as well be true.
Ta-ta!
Bye!
You and your ears are quite welcome
for the podcasting goodness that you just heard.
Why not roll on over
to BigRedBarrel.com
for more podcasts,
news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.